Hello and welcome to another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX98.3 FM People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the next half hour, and this week's episode is entitled Accidental Love Bots. Love bots. So what are we talking about this week? Essentially, we're talking about films that center on or have a prominent character that is simultaneously a robot or like an automated machine. I don't know what the specific definition of a robot is, but a kind of humanoid-like robot thing. And they are a love interest of the protagonist. Now, there's a lot of films where there's depiction of an actual love bot, which is a specific thing these days, which is like an AI robot or something that's made for the specific purpose, for the distinct purpose of being like a lover or like a romantic companion for its user. We're specifically talking about films where it's not necessarily films that it's about strict love bots like those ones like Blade Runner 2049 would be example, with Ana de Armas character would be example of an out and out love bot. These are films where you have a robot and it kind of ends up being a love interest for some reason or another. And it's interesting, there's actually so many, like, there are films about actual love bots. There are so many films about this where we are confronted with the fact, but what if you fall in love with a robot when that's not even its intended purpose? It's not like it takes that extra mark. It's like, not only is there a risk of this of love becoming automated, which we see depicted in some of the films, but also that the automated becoming loving or becoming lovable, it's almost going that extra step further, almost to make an even scarier point, we might say. We'll see what happens in today's episode. The first one we're going to talk about is, of course, well, not of course, there's so many films that talk about this. We're going to start off with the 1927 Fritz Lang masterpiece, Metropolis. We're then going to move on to, of course, Spike Jonze's 2013 film, Her. And then we're going to finish off with a new film, Robot Dreams, directed by Pablo Berger, from 2023, but only just come out. It's only just come out here. So it was recommended. And so we thank you, dear listeners, who did recommend us chatting about Robot Dreams. And I very much enjoyed it. But let's get started now with Fritz Lang's 1927 film, Metropolis. So it's a long film, it's a pretty convoluted plot. So let's break it down to the main things we're going to talk about, the main plot points. Basically, you've got Frieda, who is who is the son of this guy, Johann, who runs Metropolis, this big futuristic city, and he's the son of him. And he falls in love with this woman, Maria, he doesn't know at the beginning who she actually is and where she's from, but we can skirt through it and just say she's kind of this workers activist who comes from the worker city. So there's a lot, this film's kind of the OG one, which films like the Jordan Peele film Us and Bong Joon-ho's Parasite, a lot of them would be drawing a lot of inspiration from this film. We have the clear sort of dualistic divide of the people up the top who live their beautiful fancy life and the people who live in like the dungeon city below who do all the working and everything like that. And basically, Frieda falls in love with Maria, who's trying to not necessarily read a workers' revolution as such. There's a lot of interesting stuff you can read in this film about whether it is a socialist film or capitalist film. Very interesting question. And then because Johann, Frieda's father, doesn't really like that, he hires his inventor friend Rotwang, who has this machine man, which in 1927 is, I guess, what you'd call like an android, which is like this humanoid-like robot machine man. And it's kind of convoluted as to what the assignment is for this machine man, but the short and long of it is that Rotwang makes the machine man resemble Maria through this kidnapping experiment that he does. And her mission is essentially Johann wants her to sort of go and tell all the workers to stop thinking about revolting, and then Rotwang kind of wants to see the whole society burn in general. But the point is, she goes about and machinized version of Maria goes out to cause havoc, let's say, amongst the workers' city. And I think this film is a really interesting one this week in talking about how it depicts, it kind of depicts the love bot as sort of unachievable, the kind of unachievable nature of having a human-like robot. So it's a very 1927 depiction. We're going to compare it to the films following. I think it's a very, very stark contrast this week in how in 1927 people thought about humanoid, android-like robots and how we now think about them in today's culture. So from the beginning, we see this clear distinction between man and machine, where the workers, very much like Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times, which you chatted about a couple of weeks ago, where we see the workers working in a very sort of static and rigid way, and they resemble workers. And I think it's important to note from the outset that it's not only that they, like, it's not only that they don't look human in their roboticness, but it's a distasteful image to see a human being so robotic. Sort of so as to say that only that men and machines, not only are men and machines different, but those differences are significant and resemble the importance of, I suppose, sustaining humanity in an industrialized world. Like, we don't like seeing factory workers acting like gears in a cog. We like to see human beings having a sense of individuality, having a sense of creativity, or something like that. We see this in another film we've talked about on the show, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which came out a bit later in history. It's an American film, and probably to a greater extent, I suppose, with, I guess, the general moral of that film, or how we talked about it on the show, was that the plight of existence in sort of all what's, you know, in all of our worries that we have as human beings, we prefer to have to live a human-like life and all, you know, warts and all, versus a peaceful and, harmless life, if that latter kind of life is not like a human experience. If we become rigid and kind of Pleasantville-esque, you know, Stepford Wives-esque, we would prefer to have a hard life that's a human life than one that's sort of robotic, let's say. And I think the way that we sort of, the way that this distinction is depicted in a, you know, in very, this distinction between man and machine is depicted as probably best embodied in the film through this Maria man-machine character, the robotic version of the robot version of Maria, who can be very easily distinguished from the real Maria in the film because she's so psychopathic. And so we have this early depiction in cinema history where roboticness is synonymous with psychopathy or a kind of malevolent stoicism, or in more simpler terms, roboticness is synonymous with a kind of a lack of emotion, a lack of humanity. And if you think about the definition of the word robotic, if you look that up in the dictionary, you'll see that that's kind of what it means, unless these dictionaries have been updated. And that's not to say that this robot isn't charismatic. She is, and we've talked about that a lot on the show, how kind of human rationalism, how we can kind of through an emphasis on logic and rationality, which is very, so it's very kind of like a stoic idea as well, can lead to a state of, you know, fascism or terror or oppression. And we see that she is able to drum up a lot of malevolence in society. It's not that she's unemotional, or she isn't able to elicit emotion from her followers, but she's not loving. That's the key thing, right? She's fueled by hatred, not love. And so in this sense, she's the antithesis of a loving person. She's the antithesis of the woman that Frida fell in love with at the beginning of the film. And it's ultimately the cause of failure for Metropolis. And then that the film finishes with the sort of the philosophy of the film, which is the mediator between the head and the hands must be the heart, which is kind of like a motto of the film, the slogan of the film from start to finish. And in other words, it kind of means, you know, love must be the thing that reconciles the tension between those in power and those under their control. And so again, I guess we have sort of love being this new, refreshing concept in the industrialized world, in the world that's full of machines. It's almost like it's this forgotten concept, the way you have this sort of dualistic structure of leaders up the top and workers down the bottom. You need to sort of go through a 2.5 hour cinematic epic adventure to realize that love is important because it's so it's so hard to find. I suppose we see this in a lot of modern films, like something like Equilibrium, or there's a lot of films that sort of talk about how sort of like a Orwellian or post-industrial dystopia is emotionless. But have robots always been depicted as robotic under the dictionary definition throughout the cinema of history? Well, to sort of subvert this idea, let's talk about our next film for today's conversation. Before we do, just a reminder, you are listening to Sacred Cinema here on 2XX98.3 FM, people-powered radio, people-powered, not robot-powered. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, and stay tuned for more quality radio content here on 2XX and also jump onto our station to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring any of our shows. But moving on now to Her, directed by Spike Jonze. And basically it's about a very famous film that came out. I can't believe it came out 11 years ago. It feels like it came out yesterday, both in terms of how recent that felt like it came out and also how relevant it is. But you've got Joaquin Phoenix, who plays a very nice fellow with a moustache, Theodore, and he gets a new operating system who's voiced by Scarlett Johansson, and they fall in love and they have a relationship. And rather than in Metropolis, where we talk about the idea of this being this clear distinction between man and machine, and you could never make a man out of a machine, or you can never find the inner humanness in the machine, we need to sort of bring that in deliberately. We need to fight to bring in humanness into a machine-filled world. This is a film that I think very clearly depicts how easily love could emerge out of a very banal and industrial society. So much of the film is very banal on paper. So you have this kind of semi-dystopian setting. It's like a futuristic cityscape, which is borderline dystopian. I mean, it was shot in Shanghai, and if you've been to Shanghai, there is a kind of cyberpunky vibe to Shanghai. I was there in 2008, and it had that feel, so I imagine it's a bit like that too. And this is very much a metropolisian image, where you've got the big cyber city that is a little bit like, this doesn't feel like a place that humans would thrive. And you've got a continual depiction of humans walking alone in the city, and just in terms of how the film depicts human-to-human relationships, most of them fail, or they're cold, or they're awkward. They're more robotic than the actual relationship between Theodore and Samantha. The only one that works is the Chris Pratt relationship, and he's like the token idiot of the film. And there is some, there is a bit of dialogue that talk about how love is something that only insane people would do. It's a kind of universally agreed upon form of insanity that we allow. But I think the big one here of how the film is quite banal is that it's a story about an operating system. Like, it's like if someone said, let's make a film about Catalina, which I actually do go to Catalina, which is interesting. But Samantha is, she's not a love bot, right? She's not an AI girlfriend, which we have in the world today. Like, that could have been the film that this is about. Jonze makes it kind of hard for himself and says, look, I'll give you an operating system that's made out of AI, and I'll still show you how love can emerge and be wielded and be so palpable and profound and cause some carnage in someone's emotional life. And so despite all that banality, the film is 100% a love story, and it feels like a love story when we watch it. Now, this is largely due to, and you can't talk about Her without talking about the color of the film and the set design and the costumes and how that communicates the emotions and the inner journey that Theodore's on. I'm not going to touch on that because it's been talked about to death. And specific to this week's episode, I want to talk about, if we just put the color question aside, which I absolutely do agree is a way that this film sort of depicts the relationship and how love and that sort of stuff is how it mirrors what's, the journey. But as an audience member, the big emphasis of this show is about sort of responding to how we feel, specifically me, how I feel when I watch these films. And I can't help but feel like that we really do feel the relationship blooming as an audience member, as an onlooker in the film. And so in the same way that it really doesn't take much for Samantha's, husky voice to get Theodore in the zone romantically, it doesn't take much from us. It doesn't take much from us to sort of provoke a sense of, recognition of that love as well. Like, it starts to feel very real. And this is where we get into some really creepy territory, I think. Like, there's another film that does this, obviously, is Ex Machina, which we've talked about on the show before, where we've got simultaneously the protagonist and the audience is so easily duped into seeing, the AI technology, the relevant AI technology in that film passing the Turing test, and us, like, as audience members, literally thinking Alicia Vikander's character is a real person, partly because she's played by a real person. But anyway, but I think this film is a little bit, I don't want to say better in that, but because they're both played by human beings. But basically, I think this is almost a dangerous film today, because, as I said before, romantic chatbots absolutely 100% exist in the world. And we probably as a society haven't figured out whether that's going to end us as a human race. And sort of, I kind of think that, like, I'm trying to think that, like, I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but, like, everything that's available to Theodore is available to us now for free if we're willing to do it. Like, if you're listening to this and you wanted what that character has in the film, you can go away and do that right now. on your computer. So this is something that absolutely can emerge out of just circuit boards and electrical charges in the world right now. The film almost proves itself true just in how history has unfolded since it came out. It almost doesn't need to exist anymore. We almost just see this on the ground level. And it almost, I think, puts a film like Metropolis out of date, where I think the modern version of Metropolis now would not have... You wouldn't have Maria's robot burning at the stake. I think what you'd do is you'd have the real Maria burning at the stake and Frida having to contemplate the fact that it may be better for him and society if the robotic one, like to contemplate, is it actually better for me and my love life and these workers to have an automated version of Maria still exist and, you know, be my girlfriend and be these people's leader, while the actual person that she's emulating is dead, who, you know, had failings as a human being. And I suppose what I'm trying to say is that the current situation is not that there's a difference between man and machine, but rather man emerges out of a machine, or humanity, humaneness or humanness emerges out of a machine very, very easily today, in that you can go and do it right now. And we have to just confront that that's a reality. But why does it end, I suppose, in the film? Because it does end, the relationship does end. And in short, because there's a lot to say about this film, I'm going to try and keep it brief. But in short, we like a personal connection. And I think there's a way that you can read this film even, I mean, this is a romantic film. I think you could read this as a very deeply philosophical or spiritual film about religion even, where it's almost like an interesting take on theism and why atheism is such a preferable route for so many people, which is that... And particularly something like pantheism, which doesn't, you know, isn't particularly prominent, not necessarily because it's in a logical view, but I think people just don't like the idea of it being true, where sort of a kind of centralized or universal love interest or a universal spiritual anchor or a universal God, a centralized God, makes us as individuals feel unimportant. It kind of takes away our sense of personhood in a lot of ways. It takes away our sense of individuality for two reasons. One, it's because... That insignificance is definitely emphasized when we think about how elevated the intelligence is of the Samantha character, or if she's representative of God, for example, the thing that we love the most. Because she's so much smarter and all-knowing, we kind of pale in comparison. Like, what would she get out of us? And if there are other entities in this world that are that intelligent, what do we matter? We're like a speck of dust compared to, you know, a human being walking. A speck of dust compared to a human being walking around is like insignificant. In the same way that if we imagine how smart God, if they exist, is, what does that do for us? I mean, what does it matter if we do this show or not? What does it matter if I go to work tomorrow? It doesn't really matter. And similarly as well, because there's an omnipotence of God, there's an omnipotence of Samantha's character. She's with everyone at all times, so we don't feel there's a special personal connection. Now, I know a lot of religious people do, so they have a personal connection with God, and that's why I think that the film isn't necessarily saying one thing or the other. It's just putting that question in our mind and probably giving just a little bit more light to that side of the question, which is, you know, the lack of individuality versus the one that's pro. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's focus more on this contradiction we need to solve here. Because when we talk about Metropolis, we talked about how the depiction of a modern society in its increasing emphasis on machines kind of acts as this deterrent, or it's kind of a deterrent away from love, and is a warning, and kind of requires us to reintroduce love through some kind of deliberate means. Like, it's something we have to think to do. It's something that we have to resist. You know, resistance against industrialization reintroducing love into society is a resistance against industrialized society. But in Her, we've talked about how love is so palpable and such a powerful force that even if it's shelled in the most banal of vessels, its palpability is saying that, you know, we don't need to dredge love up in a time of loneliness. People will sell us love. People will sell us industrialized society through love. It's a capitalist's dream weapon. And we see that today. And we have to sort of confront how we feel about that and love in the modern era. So can we advance this contradiction? Can we pull ourselves out of this contradiction in any way by talking about our next film? And I should say before we get onto it, you know, Her came out in 2013, and the cartoon that this next film was based on did come out in 2007. So it's not necessarily a development in the zeitgeist, but the film itself has come out in 2023. And so I think it's worth sort of still talking about it sort of in this order and sort of talking as a response, not necessarily a response to AI, but it was made during the time of AI. And I think probably more importantly, the way that we respond to it in 2024 is probably what we're going to be talking about, and that's with the knowledge of this AI movement. So I think it can be used as a kind of response to her, or being post her rather than pre her, just in case there was any people that were getting worked up about that. I'm sure no one is. But anyway, moving on to our final film for today, Pablo Berger's 2023 film, Robot Dreams. And I'm going to, in terms of the just a brief synopsis of this film, I'm just going to straight up read what it says on Wikipedia, because I don't want to talk about what this film is actually about in a second. So it's a Spanish-French animated tragicomedy film written and directed by Pablo Berger, based on the 2007 comic. It is about the inseparable friendship between a dog and a robot in Manhattan, New York in 1984, and the film does not contain any dialogue. Okay, so keep that in mind, all those elements I just sort of talked about. So the first lens through which we're going to talk about this one is how I think, or sort of the main lens we're going to talk about, we're going to sort of go through a couple of things, but we're going to sort of end up talking about this film and how it depicts sort of, I think it kind of respects the individuality of the modern robotic, which is very standardized and wholesaled and widely available. And despite the fact that it is very centralized, products, machines and products and things are centralized and come from one central place, there is an inner individuality to them, which makes them appealing. And so in the same way that Her sort of accepts the metropolosian view, which is that love sort of emerges as a necessity in the industrialized world, where this character of Dog sort of is very lonely and is sort of made to feel very alienated in the cityscape. Not necessarily a dystopia; it's just 1980s New York City. It's very clear from the beginning that she's feeling very lonely and alienated in 1980s New York City. But like Her, it doesn't say that love is nowhere to be found in that world. Rather, it says that love sort of finds its way into her world very quickly. It doesn't take a 2.5-hour epic cinematic excursion to do that. To begin with, this robot that she ends up being a companion with is on a TV advertisement while she's sitting, or I shouldn't say she, while it, the dog, is sitting on a couch watching TV in its lonesome. But I shouldn't jump to a conclusion, assume that it is a loving relationship. It's a sort of love story. As I mentioned before, in the intro to this film, it is not called a romantic film. And it's kind of ambiguous in the nature of, in terms of how it depicts the nature of this relationship. So as I said before, it's a tragicomedy, i.e. not a romance. There's no dialogue that kind of puts labels on anything. All the characters are kind of androgynous, which I think also leads to a kind of like their relationships kind of could be anything. It doesn't play into a gender binary. And this is despite the fact that there is, though, a lot of loving imagery. So you've got a lot of holding hands, which friends don't typically hold hands. The whole thing is a response to loneliness, which is, I guess, friends can sort of be a response to loneliness. But there's a lot of dancing together, which is more of a romantic thing than a friend thing. There's a lot of embracing each other's bodies. But probably the most important thing is that this is kind of monogamous element to the friendships or the companionships or these relationships in the film, which kind of gives it a bit of a sense of lovingness. Now, whether if we had Pablo Berger here to answer whether it is a love story or not, I think it plays into this Her idea that even if the robot character in the film is not meant to be a love bot, and even if the film itself is not supposed to be a love story, we as the audience can't help but see it that way, in that we can't help but read love into these characters and that story, even if it's not directly communicated to us in words. It's another depiction of how love can emerge despite it not necessarily, these are just moving shapes on a screen, but we see love there. It's a bit like when a dog watches TV, like, how is the dog understanding it's a dog on the television? Like, we as humans can't help but read love into things that aren't necessarily meant to be love-based relationships. But this film doesn't have the same pessimism as Her. It might make some similar assumptions about love emerging in the banal. Why doesn't it have such a pessimistic view on this robot relationship? There's a relationship with the robot. Well, the depiction of the robot is not underpinned by centralization or data hoarding, even though it does come from this advert and it is a kind of wholesale thing. Like, it's something that, I shouldn't say wholesale, but it's obviously made in a factory and that sort of thing. It's not a custom made robot as such at the beginning of the film, but it has a customizability. And I think that's a metaphor, not necessarily, I don't think it's necessarily a film about robots, but rather a it's a statement about what it's like to be in a relationship with the human itself, and we have a customizable element to us. So, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, despite this film being a cartoon and having a kind of cartoonish sort of animated and childlike almost vibe to it, it's probably a more realistic depiction of love than Her in a way, or love with a bot than love than Her, because if we think about things like The Algorithm, which is probably something that Jones probably didn't pay too much attention to in 2013, The Algorithm can make AI personalized. It can make the things that we absorb online personalized. It can customize us to us. So we can have a sense that the thing that we're talking to, or the thing we're falling in love with online, is specific to us, corresponds specifically with us, because it's simply reading us specifically, and it's drawing on things other places in the world, but it knows how old we are, where we live in the world, where our interests are. So we can have this sort of sense that it is sort of customizable. And this kind of raises this whole new question, right? Because it kind of leads to this place where, like, is it that robots can be sort of programmed to be human? Right, like the robot in this character is becoming more human, or rather, that's what it is. And it's that humans are innately robotic from the start. Right, we've always been kind of robotic in a sense. And this is where the kind of animalia aspect of this film works, where all the characters are animals. Because when you think about how we view animals, we view them as robotic in that they're kind of predictable. They can be spoken about pejoratively. You know, you can say lions tend to do this, giraffes tend to do this. And humans are animals, so could you not say the same for us? So it's kind of saying something like, well, maybe it's not so much that, and like, you don't really think about when you watch the film that the robot is a robot. It just looks like another character in the film, which is to sort of say that it fits in seamlessly with the animals and vice versa. So let's recap on everything we've talked about, right? In Metropolis, we talked about how this is kind of, it depicts how there's this clear and obvious distinction between man and machine, where man must resist machine with the emergence of man, or love is sort of needed in order to overcome over-industrialization. But in Her, we talked about how any smart industrialist would build love and humanity into their industries, into their robots, to make them more appealing to human beings. And that can lead to some issues around sort of, you know, what even is love? How can we even know what love specifically is? Well, in Robot Dreams, we kind of talk about this idea that there is still a customizability to robots, right? We don't have to just see ourselves as falling in love with a centralized entity. We can kind of circumvent that grievance by sort of accepting that human beings have kind of been a bit like robotic all along. Like, is it that robots are becoming more human-like, or we have just been advanced kind of squishy machines fueled by love all along, and the customizability of a human is akin to the customizability of a robot, and there isn't any meaningful difference? Well, where do we go from here? Is the next kind of film in this ballpark going to be talking about the humanity of AI? Is it going to be saying something like, We need to seriously contemplate whether relationships between man and robot is a negligible thing, it's a trivial thing, and we should just allow it to happen? Well, I think no matter how this is depicted in the future, there is sort of an underlying commonality in all these films, which is, despite all their differences, I don't think it's a coincidence that all three of them are set in giant metropolises, right? Where from high above, all of these millions of characters scurry about like little electrical charges on a circuit board, all in search of someone or something to attract. That's all we've got time for this week on Sacred Cinema. I've been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Be sure to stay tuned to 2XX for more quality radio programming, and we'll see you again next week. You can also get in contact with me by emailing me at contact@jimbernasconi.com. See you next week.